This is a really cool session, or keynote rather, talking about Office 365 and this sort of evolution of collaboration. I think you'll really enjoy it. So let me bring up to the stage Dan Holm, Chris McNulty, and Scott Hillier. Give them a big hand. Thanks, guys.
Good morning, everybody. I hope you've enjoyed Dev Intersection, SharePoint Intersection, Office 365 Intersection, and the whole suite of events here this week. My name is Dan Holm. I am the Director of Product Marketing for SharePoint at Microsoft, and I brought with me two of my closest colleagues and friends, Chris McNulty and Scott Hillier. Chris, do you want to introduce yourself?
Hi, good morning, folks. I'm Chris. I am a recovering SharePoint MVP. I joined Microsoft last year as a product manager, also in the SharePoint OneDrive group with Dan.
And Scott Hillier.
Scott Hillier. I'm not a recovering MVP. I'm actually an MVP, the non-Microsoft guy on the stage for Office servers and services.
Awesome. And we are going to talk today about SharePoint, Office 365, Azure, and you, and look at what the changes that Microsoft has implemented over the past years and what we're about to announce 2 weeks from now will really impact your decision-making about your how you support productivity and collaboration in your organization and how you chart your own careers. And so we're going to start by taking a look at where Microsoft is going, what is important to us right now, and then boil it down to the space of collaboration where SharePoint and Office 365 live, and focus very heavily on the innovations we have brought to the table for not only IT pros, but also especially with this event for developers of all kinds. So at the high level, Microsoft's mission right now is to empower every person in every organization on the planet to achieve more. And I personally think that we are about ready to extend that mission to include outer space. If you've watched some of the keynotes recently, you've seen a lot about astronauts using Microsoft technologies at the International Space Station, et cetera. But right now, we're keeping it humble, just everyone on the planet. And in order to do this, we need to make sure that we are responding to the reality of today, which we perceive to be obviously mobile first and cloud first. And within that space, we are trying to build the best in class platforms for productivity and the best in class services for productivity in this mobile first, cloud first world. Our ambitions are really three. We want to reinvent productivity and business process. That is the space we're going to be talking about today, collaboration. To build the intelligent cloud platform on which you can, as developers, build your own applications and services. And we want to create more personal computing with interactions and experiences across devices of all kinds that are intelligent and that give you what you need to get your jobs done. At Envision a couple of weeks ago, Satya Nadella, our CEO, spoke about how every company these days is in many ways a software company, a technology company, because companies are transforming themselves with the powers of the technologies at their hands to do more, to engage their customers, to empower employees, to optimize operations, and actually to transform products and business models. And we'll talk about how these four pillars really come to you in what we're bringing to you in your organizations. Just before Envision, there was Microsoft Build, which of course is our annual event for developers, and we made some really significant announcements to developers at Build, and I'd like to invite Scott to talk a little bit about those announcements.
Thanks, Dan. So one of the interesting things to me about Build is that somebody who comes from the Office and SharePoint environment, I really didn't pay that much attention to Build in years gone by, but now we're being asked to move away from that sort of nice, warm space where we had SharePoint and everything was sort of, you know, if you wanted a content type, you do it this way, and into more open source type technologies. So conferences like Build become very important to us. So Microsoft made some announcements at Build that I think we should care about as Office and SharePoint devs. Well, you know, maybe not the HoloLens and the Xbox and the bot stuff, but
I like those.
Yeah. They're fun. But for people that are making applications for business people to use, a couple of things that are important to me. First of all, we have some new capabilities coming out in the Microsoft Graph. So when I talk about Microsoft Graph, I mean the Microsoft Graph endpoint, so graph.microsoft.com. If you haven't visited graph.microsoft.com, go there and check out all the RESTful APIs that you can call. Microsoft continues this vision of taking all of its products, really, and getting them into a place where we can have RESTful APIs that we call. So that's big. We're also moving the Office add-in model to the Mac, so we're already creating Office add-ins, and now we're going to be able to create them for the Mac. We're getting more APIs, Skype for Web and Skype for Business, both got API announcements. Office 365 group connectors, we now have an API that's going to allow us to use Office 365 groups and push our content into it. But to me, probably the biggest thing about Build was not necessarily these announcements, but the continuation of the presentations and the rolling out of ASP.NET Core 1. ASP.NET Core 1, the next version of ASP.NET that runs on multiple platforms, supports open source. That stuff is really important to us as SharePoint developers, and all the work that I've been doing is really to take those open source technologies and do Office and SharePoint development with them. So if you haven't had a chance to look at ASP.NET Core 1, or maybe you thought you didn't care because you're just a SharePoint developer, so that's not for me, go to Channel 9, check out the sessions that were done on ASP.NET Core 1 at Build. That stuff will really be worth your time.
Awesome. Cool. And one of the other sets of announcements we've made over the past couple of weeks that really, I think, bodes for an exciting future is Conversations as a Platform. We announced that Cortana will be integrated into Skype, and you will be able to use Cortana within the context of Skype to answer questions and to engage. And that concept of bots and agents being integrated into the types of tools that users use every day, whether it's Skype or one of the other what we call canvases and surfaces within the Microsoft suite, is a really interesting place to look. What can you do within Skype, within Outlook, within Word, within PowerPoint, within Excel, within the tools that people are using every day to make those experiences more engaging and to bring your customers more close to you, to bring your employees more close to you, and to get better insights into your operations. And so keep an eye on what we're going to be doing with Conversations as a Platform, because I think it's a very, very interesting space for developers, particularly right now, to be spending time in. Okay, so within the broad mission of Microsoft, we're really focusing today on SharePoint and Office 365, which is one of the core elements of our vision of productivity. And within that vision, we are trying to achieve four things. We're trying to make sure that you've got the tools you need to collaborate effectively, and that the experiences you have with our technologies are intelligent. It's no longer enough just to have stable, reliable, secure platforms and experiences. You need to have experiences that make you more productive, and one of the easiest ways to do that is for the technology to start helping you get your job done by understanding who you are, who you work with, the content that's important to you, and the types of gestures you have with that content. And so technologies like Office Graph and intelligence technologies like bots and Cortana are certainly a big piece of that. We also obviously want to make sure that we give you those experiences across devices, because one thing that is paramount is no matter how good technology is, it has to align with who we are as people. And today, as people, we are mobile. The human experience is a mobile experience. We all have devices. Many of us have multiple devices. Just getting ready for this slideshow today, I think there were at least six different devices and three different operating systems involved. And we need to make sure, as Microsoft, that we're allowing you to take your experiences and, more importantly, your data across all devices so that wherever you are, they're at your fingertips. And, of course, we can only do that effectively if we're giving you a platform that you can trust, that's secure, that ensures your privacy, and that allows you to support compliance regulations that are important to your organization. So that's what we built with Office 365. We've built a productivity suite, a collaboration suite with lots of tools and services that people have grown to know and love. And remember that there are over a billion people using Office in the world today. And that's an amazing opportunity for organizations and developers to tap into. If you're able to create an experience, a service, an application that delivers value, you've got a potential market of a billion people to tap into. And all of those services and applications that are part of the Office 365 suite share a common fabric that is characterized by what we call the three Gs: Graph, Groups, and Governance. Groups allows you to define membership, to say who is a team and who is involved on a particular project. And for that definition of membership to drive access and experience across all of the individual components. That's a very big piece of integration, where if you're using disconnected services, you have to manage identity and membership in each individual service. Now with Office 365, you've got the broad range of services sharing a common construct of identity and membership. Office Graph powering that intelligence experience, understanding who you are, who you work with, and the content that's important to you. And very importantly, security and governance, giving you the controls you need to abide by the regulations and requirements that you're under. Office 365 has obviously been very successful. I'm not going to step you through all of the statistics. They're here on the slide that you can read afterwards. But the bottom line is Microsoft is definitely an industry leader in cloud productivity. We are uniquely positioned to deliver the services that power productivity and to create a platform on which you can build additional experiences and services. And SharePoint celebrates this year its 15th birthday, and it also is an incredible ecosystem. It's a business that's a multi-billion dollar business for Microsoft. It's got an incredible community built around it that's really unique in the world. There's over 1 million people on LinkedIn who list SharePoint specifically as one of their capabilities and areas of interest. It's an incredibly powerful community for us, and it's important for you to know that we at Microsoft are standing very strongly behind SharePoint, both on-prem and in the cloud. SharePoint's been an incredibly important core element of collaboration for our customers for 15 years, and we're really excited to take you and all of our customers forward into this cloud-first, mobile-first world with this tool that you rely on so heavily. And so SharePoint and OneDrive is on a mission, really, to reinvent content collaboration for this mobile-first, cloud-first, intelligence-powered world. We're going to deliver the experiences and the value of SharePoint and OneDrive in this new world. And we're very excited to invite you to join us on May 4th for what we're calling our Future of SharePoint event. On May 4th, we will be announcing the grand vision of SharePoint and how we will achieve exactly this mission. It's a virtual event. We're conducting it in person in San Francisco for a limited number of customers, partners, and enthusiasts. But we're going to be streaming the event worldwide on May 4th, and I'll give you the URL at the end of the session and invite you to join and watch Jeff Teeper and Seth Patton and a number of our other leadership of our SharePoint and OneDrive teams unveil what we've got cooking for you. What we've released to date are, first of all, some important updates to OneDrive. OneDrive was, of course, a very successful consumer platform, one of the most heavily used cloud storage platforms for individuals, and we've now unified the engineering teams for OneDrive and OneDrive for Business, so they're using the best of both efforts in the past. And we've delivered rock-solid sync both for consumer OneDrive and now for OneDrive for Business as well. We're seeing incredible uptake, great metrics around the success of what we built into OneDrive. And one of the key points about OneDrive is that not only is it rock-solid sync, it's rock-solid selective sync, meaning you're able to say which files and folders you want offline per device. Because it might be at home, you want to have files from a subset of your work, but also a larger set of files from the community groups that you belong to. At work, you might have all of your work files available offline. On your phone, you might have a much smaller subset of files because your phone has limited storage. So we are giving you the ability to synchronize files across devices, across platforms, PC, Mac, iOS, and Android, and in a way that you can be sure that the files are there when you need them. The mobile apps we've created on iOS, Android, and Windows are super highly rated. They're 4-star-plus applications, and we're investing in new experiences and features within those applications almost every month. And in addition to the great experience we provide in the mobile applications, we are giving you an equally great experience online. And we've just in the last couple of weeks announced some really exciting enhancements to the browser experience of OneDrive. And again, we're doing all of this productivity and collaboration support while never sacrificing trust, security, compliance, and control. And we've given you the ability to extend your IT controls to things like who is able to access files externally with external sharing. So, just recently, we've started releasing new ways for you to audit and report activity in OneDrive. SharePoint Online is getting investments all of the time as well. Recently, we've announced great new enhancements in collaboration, co-authoring, and external sharing, so it's easier than ever for people to be working on different devices, but working on the same document at the same time. And sometimes it's the small things that matter. Co-authoring is a big thing. But for me, one of my favorite enhancements in the Microsoft Office space is modern attachments. In Outlook, we spend our time writing emails, right? And sending files as attachments. The single most used tool for collaboration still remains email. And we don't think it's right for us as Microsoft to fight that. Instead, we want to help people make the transition to a more efficient way of sharing and collaborating. We know the pain that happens when we start sending file attachments around. First of all, your inbox gets huge. Second of all, every person on that CC list has their own version of the file, makes their own edits, and you've got this proliferation of versions. You have no single source of truth. It becomes very difficult to collaborate in that old way of sending email attachments. But that's what people do. So in Outlook 2016, in Outlook Web Access, you're now able to attach a file that is stored in your OneDrive or for business, and that will go as a link to that file. And behind the scenes, Outlook does the job of giving permissions to that file so that the people you're sending the email to will have the correct levels of access to it. So the experience for the users is exactly the same. They get an email with something attached to it. But what they're actually working on is the single file in your OneDrive. And so you've got, they've got the ability to make changes to a single version. You can see all of the changes that people are making, single source of truth. And in that OneDrive for Business and or SharePoint Document Library, you've got the ability to manage versions. So if you do want to go back and look at version history and other things, you've got the ability to do that. Very small change to Outlook makes a very big improvement to the way people work. We've also baked in Office 365 video into SharePoint Online over the last year and a half. That, as you know, is an enterprise-class video service allowing you to take everything from meeting recordings to company town halls to training and getting them online within Office 365. And one of the most exciting changes in Office 365 to me is Delve and Office Graph, giving us that intelligent recommendation and access to our colleagues throughout our organization. And that, I'll be doing a session later today on Delve and Office Graph, so I'll save the details on that. So lots and lots of changes to the cloud. As you know, Microsoft is innovating in the cloud first. That's where we have the ability to innovate and to be agile and to get a feeling for what we're doing and the impact it's having on our customers, to identify what works, what doesn't. And then we're able to take those innovations and bring them to you on premises. And just last month, we sent to RTM SharePoint Server 2016, the latest version of SharePoint Server. And in that, we focused on four pillars. We made sure that we provided enhanced user experience. And so everything from the mobile experience to the way users interact with document libraries has been improved. We also made sure that we baked in robust security and compliance. And among other things, you now have the ability to manage policy and compliance on both your on-prem SharePoint servers and SharePoint online in the cloud. We baked in the document deletion policy center, for example, is on the screenshot. One of the things that's probably most important for you to understand about SharePoint Server 2016 is that it brings to you on premises all of the learnings that Microsoft has had running SharePoint online in the cloud. So in Office 365, we provide SharePoint Online for millions and millions of users. We've learned a lot about what it takes to run that service at scale. Everything from how we deploy servers, to how we monitor performance, to how we ensure uptime, and how we patch and update those servers. We've learned a lot. And in SharePoint 2016, we've taken the code base of SharePoint Online and brought it to you on premises, bringing all of the benefits of our learning directly to you. So now you'll find deployment is improved with MinRoll, for example, where you can specify the role a server is going to play, and we bake the services correctly and then monitor those services over time. We've got zero downtime patching, where now when you apply a public update or a cumulative update, you're able to do that on a farm without experiencing downtime for your users. We've got all kinds of changes there for you on premises. And at the core, we've also been able, through this unified code base, to give you a truly unified hybrid experience. And we'll talk more about hybrid in just a moment, but hybrid doesn't mean that you have to use Office 365, but it means you can if you want to. It allows you to start consuming cloud services at the pace that works for you, and to take those workloads on premises and move them up into the cloud. So SharePoint 2016 is a really foundational release. It was born in the cloud, truly. It is from our code base in Office 365, brought to you on premises, and allowing you to connect to, consume, and leverage the innovation that we're delivering in Office 365. One of the common things we hear from customers whenever we release a new version of SharePoint is, well, we want to wait until we know it's ready. and that it's, that the market has had an opportunity to test this software. One of the things that's critical for you to know if you're talking to your organization about SharePoint 2016 is that SharePoint 2016 is by far the most comprehensive, validated, tested version of SharePoint ever. Because we're not just giving you a brand new set of code to run on premises. We're taking code that's been run in the cloud and validated at scale, tested against hundreds of millions of users, and brought to you on-prem. So it is really ready for prime time. And because it's a unified code base, support is going to be improved as well. Because now when there's an issue that you're facing with an on-premises SharePoint farm, you're going to be able to access the same engineers who are supporting the service at scale. And so that's going to make support a much more interesting friction-reduced experience for you. Finally, and this is what you're going to really see on May 4th, SharePoint Server 2016 is the foundation for the future. By giving you a code base in your data center that is identical to what we are using in Office 365, it allows us to innovate in Office 365 and bring those innovations to you at a much faster pace. So by putting SharePoint 2016 in place, you're guaranteeing yourself the ability to leverage innovations faster at a pace that works for you and your business than ever before. And join us on May 4th for details about how we will be doing that. But SharePoint 2016 is truly a long-term investment in the ability to maintain innovation in your on-prem SharePoint farms. I mentioned that SharePoint is hybrid at core, and this is something I want to bring Scott and Chris into here as well. One of the key things about SharePoint is how it integrates with the cloud. And I'd like you to think about hybrid really in two ways. First, there is what I would call transitional experiences in SharePoint 2016. If you're running SharePoint 2016 on-prem, the user interface, it looks very similar to Office 365. There's now a waffle to app launcher in the upper left corner, for example. And you might be running as a user on your against your SharePoint 2016 on-premises farm, working on a team site. You click that waffle, and you get an app launcher. And one of those apps might be something like Delve. You click Delve, you open Delve, and you continue to work, and you get the powerful intelligence recommendations from Delve. As soon as you start using Delve, you're actually using a cloud experience. So you've gone from an on-prem team site into the cloud. You've been transitioned, and you're able to leverage this innovative type of service in Office 365. That's one type of hybrid, where you're just on-prem and you seamlessly transition to the cloud. And you're going back and forth with less friction because we've improved the user interface and unified them between Office 365 and SharePoint. The second core type of hybrid is the more traditional way we think about hybrid. It's integrated, it's unified, so that you're able to solve problems on-premises that you couldn't solve before by leveraging capabilities with Office 365. So for example, one of the things I run into commonly with customers is that if they have more than one SharePoint farm, there becomes some friction in doing auditing and reporting because each farm is its own container. With SharePoint 2016 and Office 365, we now have an auditing capability that allows you to unify the audit logs from each of your on-prem farms between and from on-prem to Office 365, so that you've got a single detailed view of what's going on in your entire environment. That service is being provided by Office 365, but it's really unifying not only Office 365 and on-prem, but perhaps multiple on-prem SharePoint farms. Similarly, search. If you've got more than one SharePoint farm, or if you've got a SharePoint farm and an Office 365 set of activities, giving users a unified, rich search experience has been somewhat painful in the past. And now with hybrid search, you've got the ability to flip a switch and in completely integrate the on-prem and cloud-based SharePoint experiences, as well as multiple on-prem farms. And these hybrid experiences that we're powering, we're often bringing not just to SharePoint 2016, but to SharePoint 2013 and SharePoint 2010. So with hybrid search, for example, you're able to unify your search experience across SharePoint Online, SharePoint 2016, SharePoint 2013, and potentially also SharePoint 2010. So we're trying to stand there with you and build a bridge that allows you to solve problems that you have on premises, potentially leverage cloud services to solve those problems, and then give you the power to leverage our innovation in the cloud at your own pace. So
the one thing I'd want to add to that is there's other workloads where you have a choice as to what goes where.
Yep.
So there's things like Sites and particularly OneDrive. You can absolutely run OneDrive on premises, and we've made investments in all of the tooling and all of the clients to allow people to synchronize their content from premises. But we also know for most organizations, BYOD is a reality, and being able to support those personally owned devices, but at the same time make sure I have active management of the content they're synchronizing offline, the cloud is probably a better home as a connection point for most of those things. Our hybrid technology makes it possible for you to decide when and on what terms you want to turn on OneDrive for Business in the cloud and use that as the connection point for those BYODs.
Absolutely. And Scott, I know you've got some pretty strong thoughts about what hybrid really means to organizations.
Well, when I talk to people about hybrid, usually the first thing that comes out of their mouth is we're worried about putting our data in the cloud. That seems to be the very first thing, right? But what I encourage people to think about is get your identity in the cloud. Because what's important to understand is that all of the energy, all the things that Microsoft is doing in the cloud are all lit up when your identity gets to the cloud. So you don't have, going hybrid doesn't mean I have to take my company's financial data and put it up in the cloud. That's not what that means. What you do as a first step is get your identities up there. Then things get lit up, then you can do this pick and choose to say what's right for us, what do we want to start with. So that's really what I think you should think about is how do we get that identity into the cloud, not I have to worry about my on-premises data going there, because I don't have to do that when I first get started.
Exactly. We want to be there with you on-prem, and you'll see that we're making significant investments in SharePoint 2016, not just with what we released last month, but with what we're going to be releasing over the near future. And we want to use SharePoint 2016 as a way to create that bridge that you can walk over at your own pace and with the workloads that make sense to you, and leverage the innovation in the cloud. And one of the great areas of innovation in the cloud that we'd like to focus a little bit here on is Power Apps.
Thanks, Dan. Let's make sure I've got. So when we're looking at kind of the landscape for how application development is happening, that's the backs key. There we go. You know, we all carry lots of devices. Actually, back here on stage, there's as many smartphones and tablets running as we actually have laptops running the presentation. And we've come to expect very high standard in our consumer apps. No matter what, there's an app for it. If you can imagine some silly thing like, I want an on-demand balloon service, Uber for balloons, and I'm sure that there's an app out there for it already. The tooling has been out there, the evolution of that marketplace has been significant, so we have that very diverse and rich ecosystem. But one of the things that we do know is that from a business perspective, we're not seeing that same rich ecosystem of mobility-enhanced applications coming out there. We expect much more from what we get from the consumer world than we do from our own IT staffs. We did some research on this, and there's a lot of reasons for it. There's data complexity. There's certainly lots of line of business data that need to be consumed into the modern business application. But probably most importantly is that IT's traditional budgets are dedicated to those large systems which are the backbone of most organizations. John Hancock, a company I consulted with for a number of years, has a large pool of policyholders. They have to measure these application systems in decades, and they need to go get regulatory approval to make changes for them. IT needs to be dedicated to things like that. As a result, there's very little budget for dealing with applications that are more modernly oriented, much more focused on tablets and on mobile form factors, and the way that we actually want to consume those applications. At the same time, it's really hard to find good development skills, even now, who are focused on the problems of mobility. So that's where we see Power Apps really playing a role. If you look at the right, we're talking about those long-term systems of record. Those are the backbone of most organizations, as I mentioned, and IT is going to have budget dedicated to those things. The mission for Power Apps is to create tooling to allow us to rapidly develop applications on a different application lifecycle, things that might not otherwise get budget, but by making it as simple as possible for professional developers and citizen developers to be able to create these applications, we can start to reach applications that might only live for a week, something that's event-based, or a process that might run for a month or two, a project planning process or employee HR review systems. We see Power Apps having application for things like surveys, for issue tracking, and for being able to mobilize some of those big line of business systems that we know are out there. At its core, Power Apps is an umbrella term for a suite of tools and services. Connections are fundamental to how Power Apps work. Power Apps are not limited solely to premises or to cloud or even to Microsoft, but has already in preview supporting a diverse ecosystem of connection points to be able to bring in what you would expect from Microsoft, systems like Dynamics CRM, SQL, SharePoint, and Exchange, as well as premises sources like Oracle and cloud sources like Salesforce, Dropbox. We expect to have dozens and dozens and dozens by the time we go to general availability this year. Power Apps also has a design canvas that allows me to rapidly build an application in no-code, low-code mode, while at the same time opening up the extension into API apps to further enrich what the Power Apps experience is going to do. And finally, being able to publish those apps seamlessly to Windows, iOS, Android, and UWP. So that said, let's kind of take a look at what Power Apps is doing in action. So we're going to switch over to my demo machine here. So this here, this is a SharePoint list living in Office 365. I can just refresh it. And as you'll note, we're picking up tweets from the live feed, looking at the hashtag dev intersection. We can see some of the things that are out there. What's written on his shirt? There's an interesting tweet.
Hey Jude. So it's lyrics to Hey Jude.
I got Mickey Mouse.
So this is just capturing this information into the list is built with part of Power Apps. Let me show you a little bit of how that was done. If we take a look, there's a related technology for building a flow. And flow allows me to do these declarative workflow and logic and data movement processes. Here I have a flow that's reaching out and looking for the Twitter stream. Anytime I see hashtag dev intersection, I could apply some conditional logic, but here I'm just going to go grab everything. I'm going to add it to that custom list at SharePoint.com/marketing, and I'm picking up just the text of the tweet and who did it and dropping it in a list for further processing. That's relatively straightforward. But the power of Power Apps is my ability to then be able to create an app on the fly quickly that I can start to use to consume across mobile devices. Power Apps can be built from templates. Power Apps can be built from scratch to code everything by hand. But here we're going to do a quick start with data that already exists. In this case, that list where I'm getting a live feed of the hashtag dev intersection. So we can see out there, it's going to ask me what connections have I already defined. If I hadn't already defined one, I could pick up any of these connection types. You can see Box, Dropbox, Dynamics, Salesforce, and so forth. In this case, I already have a connection out there for where this is living. And it can go out there and see some sites where I've done some work recently. I'm going to pick up this one, connect out to it. And it's going to show me the custom lists that are available on the site. I'm going to go grab the event tweets list, say I want to connect to it. Now, Power Apps is going to start the process of building out a three-screen mobile application for me to customize further. And it's going to I'm going to chat here because it takes for about a minute for it to come up on screen. But what it's going to build for me is a launch screen that's going to show me all the data that's in the application. It's going to build a view screen where I can drill into specific data and an edit screen. And I can very rapidly come in here to this application and look at what it's looking at here. Let's say I'm comfortable with the layout. I can apply some theming on the fly. Let's grab Blue Steel in honor of Zoolander 2's release earlier in the year. And I can start to say I want to change some of the fields that are on this. So I might want this field. Instead of being the hashtag, let's go get who tweeted it. And this field, let's go grab the actual text that was put there. And I can go in further and start to look at, in this application, the idea is that I have a live feed of tweets. I want people to be able to look at this in their mobile device and rapidly put a rating on it. And when I put a rating on a tweet, I could then trigger further actions with another flow. Here I'm looking at fields like the rating that's on it, and I can see that it's coming up. It sees that it is coming in as a text field. I can go apply some quick formatting to it, view it there to show it as a star rating. Similarly, jump down to the edit screen, grab the rating, change this rating field to show it as a star. And I can go in and apply further information. I could preview this app here live and start to see how it's going to interact, but I think it's probably more interesting to jump over to one of the places where I've actually got a similar app that I've already built to live here on iOS. So if we switch over to my phone here, So here we can see a conference tweet app that I've built. It's applied to the same data source already. I've already done a little bit of customization here. We can drill into a single tweet. We can see this is your gateway to configuration information about Docs. I can like that one. So let's say that I want to drill in further, get more information. I've added some interactive information here about some other products that might be related to this company. In short, Power Apps is a very rapid application design surface that I can use for no-code, low-code apps, whether it's for prototyping or as a starting point to enrich it further with the APIs that are being supported by the Azure team. So I hope you really like what we're able to do with Power Apps. That said, we've got a little bit more to wrap up here.
Yep, exactly. Thank you so much, Chris. Appreciate it. And you know, one of the things that I love about Power Apps is...
I liked it, Chris.
Yeah, good job.
Thank you.
You know, as Chris said, one of the things I love about Power Apps is that it solves really three problems. First, people are constantly wanting to get information from external data sources into SharePoint. And on premises, that was done with things like the business connectivity services. Now with Power Apps, we've got the ability to bring it not only into on-prem lists, but into the cloud. Second, Power Apps gives us that ability to mobilize SharePoint and to take things that we normally do in SharePoint and create apps out of it. And third, it puts this development into the hands of low-code, no-code individuals, whether you call them information workers or citizen developers. There's people who want to solve business problems, and Power Apps makes that happen. Now, at some point, organizations have needs that go beyond Power Apps, and Power Apps is extensible by developers, but we get to the point where we have the opportunity to build really significant solutions using incredible new tools, and that's where I'm going to bring Scott up to talk about the dev side of things.
Okay, great. So one of the things that I think you can see is happening through this story is that there's this spectrum that we're moving along, right, from the citizen developer all the way up through what's sometimes called the the pro dev, citizen to pro dev. And so what I want to do is show you a solution here that's built on some of the latest and greatest stuff. So let's go ahead and just go into an Office 365 site that I have. I'm going to have to. If I really want to see, I'll have to put on my glasses here. There we go, better.
Scott's rocking the red shirt, isn't he?
Yep.
Guthrie would be proud.
All right. So if I typed all that right, we should go right in. Okay, great. Of course, I have to log in because it's Office 365. So I'll do that.
Secure by design.
Okay, cool. So all I want to show you here is that when I come into this SharePoint site and I go to site contents right here, if I click on site contents, you know, just as you would expect, we have a bunch of lists and libraries and things here, and I'm just going to pick on this announcements list so we can do something really simple, but show some of the power. I'm clicking on that here. Is it, do it again? One, two, there it goes. All right, so you see I've got just some announcements here. Now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to come back here to Visual Studio, and what I want to run for you is an application that follows a particular pattern here, and the pattern that I'm following uses SharePoint as a services layer. So there's a bunch of different patterns that we can use for Office and SharePoint development. They have use along this spectrum that we're talking about, depending upon how complex our application needs to be, what business problems we're solving. And we're kind of all the way at the other end now with this. And in this pattern, what we're doing is we're creating an application that's running on ASP.NET Core 1.0. It's using Angular 2 beta. So I'm using release candidate and beta stuff here. So this is about as leading edge as we're going to get. And it's using SharePoint as a services layer. So let's just run it real quick, and then we'll talk about a couple of things here. So I'm going to go ahead and run it. And of course, I can run it right from Visual Studio. It's going to go ahead and fire up. It's going to start a browser for me. And here you can see that I'm in just a regular application. The key point here is I'm not inside of Office 365. But what I can do is I can utilize that organizational account that's associated with Office 365 for security purposes. So I'm going to go over here and click on login, and when I do that, it bounces me to that familiar login screen that I was just using to get in and see the list. I'll use exactly the same organizational account and password, the same credentials that I was using to get into SharePoint, and that's really key. That's why I say get your identity in the cloud. Because all this stuff lights up when you have your identity in the cloud. You want that one organizational account that you can use to enable all this. So I'm going to go ahead and log in. And when I do log in, it bounces me back. You can see it offers to log me out. But now it kind of knows who I am, right? I'm able to find out things like some profile information. So there's a giant welcome message with my email. But it clearly knows who I am, right? We've proven that. And then if I come here to the announcements section, it goes and it reads that SharePoint list. And here I can also do, you know, something simple and easy to understand. We can add something else. So we'll just say, maybe an announcement about the keynote, and maybe something in the body that says, don't forget about May 4th. Okay, and we'll go ahead and click add. And when I do that, sure enough, there it is, don't forget about May 4th. And if I come back and we look at this same screen and refresh it, sure enough, there it is inside the list. Don't forget about May 4th. Now, we've been able to do this kind of thing using different technologies, right? We used to call them Office 365 APIs, right, before we had the RESTful endpoints. But what's different here is not really the function, reading it, talking to this SharePoint list. What's different is really how we're doing it. So if I go back here into Visual Studio, what I want to point out to you here is that I'm creating an application that's based on the new ASP.NET Core 1. So this is in Visual Studio 2015, the new ASP.NET Core 1 web project. And inside of here, this, what ASP.NET Core is all about is creating a very, very light version of ASP.NET. Now, the reason for creating this light version is to be able to run this on other platforms and to be able to plug and play what you want. So this is kind of interesting. If we come in here and we just look at the startup file here, if I go into my startup file, here's the configure section right here. And in this configure section, you can see that I'm asking for IIS, I'm asking for default files, and I'm asking for static files. Now, what I want you to get out of this is that ASP.NET Core doesn't know anything. It doesn't know how to show an HTML page when you first get started. You have to tell it how to do everything by loading in these modules. And the value of that to you is it makes it as light as possible, particularly when you're running on non-Microsoft platforms. But if you want to run on Microsoft platforms, it's easy enough to ask for IIS. But I'm also using Angular 2. And so in this particular sample, I'm not using any server-side code at all. This is all JavaScript stuff. So all I really want is default files and static files. This project doesn't know what a model view controller is at this point. It has no idea what any server-side code is. It only works for client-side stuff. So that's actually pretty cool. And then what happens is I can now go up and I can begin to write my application. And if I write my application, the other thing that I think is really important for you guys is what I am doing here is, as I said, using Angular 2, but also using TypeScript. So we could spend a bunch of time talking about why Angular 2 and TypeScript are cool, but let me just kind of shrink this down so you can see it and point out a couple of things that I think are really important from a professional developer point of view. When you write JavaScript, you want to write with the latest and greatest features of the language. So for us, that means ECMAScript 6, or what we call ECMAScript 2015, right? That's the latest and greatest. However, the browsers don't support the latest and greatest, right? And there will forever be a gap between the browsers you target and the language features you want. That gap will never disappear. It will roll forever. So as ES7 comes out, as ES8 comes out, and ES6 gets picked up by the browsers, there'll be a continuous gap as it moves along. Meaning that if you want to be able to use the latest and greatest features of the JavaScript language, you need some mechanism to write the latest and greatest features and then transpile down to a supported version of the language. And that's why you should care about TypeScript. So here I am writing ECMAScript 6 style code. Look at this, I've got classes, I've got methods. One of the things that I'm super excited about is, look at the top of the file, it has import statements. So just like in C#, where you don't have to heave the entire .NET framework into your application in order to build something simple, I don't want to have to do that in JavaScript. I don't want to heave the entire Angular 2 framework into my application just to write something simple. So import statements in JavaScript work exactly the same way that we want them to work in C#. Pick the pieces of the framework you want and import them. And then when I go to write my actual business application, one of the things that drives me nuts is when I have to write a bunch of plumbing code. I hate writing plumbing code, right? I just want to focus on my business application. And if we look in here at what the TypeScript compiles to, the JavaScript right here. Okay, here's the JavaScript that comes out. So let me do this again so we can really appreciate it. There's the wonderful TypeScript. There is JavaScript hell right there. Who wants to write that? All kinds of plumbing code and everything else. So using TypeScript allows you to do the latest and greatest parts of the language while compiling to something that's supported by the browsers. It's far easier for you to work with. It gets you away from the plumbing code. ASP.NET Core 1.0 gives you the lightest possible platform that works on different platforms. But if you're not interested in doing it on anything other than Microsoft platforms, then you can simply load in the pieces you need to support Microsoft platforms. So my message to you guys about development is we all know it's changing. And I would just say to you, if you're not doing the types of things that I'm showing you here, I think you owe it to yourself to kind of put it on your personal development list to start to learn these technologies, because this is only going to become more and more important as we go on, and certainly going to be very important this year. That's it.
Awesome. Great. Scott, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And you know, one of the things I love about what Scott just did is, I've known Scott for a long time, and I can tell you, 3 or 4 years ago, you would have not expected those kinds of words to be coming out of a SharePoint development session. Angular, TypeScript, JavaScript, ASP.NET Core. This is great stuff, and it's part of that transition that Microsoft is making to give you all the ability to leverage our services, the platform we've built, with the tools and the patterns and the approaches of your choice. And Scott mentioned the power of the Graph API, and one of the things to keep in mind is whenever you are needing to build an application to support productivity and collaboration in your organization, think about how you can take the pieces that we've given you, the services, and leverage those so that you can focus on the business app, the logic that's valuable to your organization, rather than replumbing things that we've already got for you. How many of you have ever built an application where, in the end, a piece of it involved saving a file somewhere? I mean, that's something that a lot of people have done. We've got OneDrive. We've got the Files API that you can use to store files. And guess what? The moment you do that, those files are available on people's mobile devices through the OneDrive app. And if you want to have a user presentation layer on mobile devices, you can build a mobile app that exposes OneDrive. But you didn't have to worry about the plumbing of file transfer and of security and of compliance and reporting and auditing. We're doing all of that for you. If you've got an application that deals with time, leverage the calendar API. If you've got an application that deals with tasks, we've got APIs for that. Take advantage of what we've built. It's an incredible toolbox that allows you to put the pieces together. And as developers, I can tell you where you're most valuable is where you're creating that layer of business logic that is truly solving the business problem. Just before I came to Microsoft, I owned my own company, and we had to make very specific decisions about where we invested our development dollars. And it wasn't in rebuilding things that already existed. It was in putting them together in new ways with that glue that was specific and solved our problems. And so take advantage of the things. Do you have any thoughts on that regard, Scott?
I think you covered it good.
Okay.
You're in good shape.
This was a slide to support one of your thoughts on the developers, because I think a lot of this group is developers, obviously, and I think I'll let Scott talk about where you need to be looking as you look ahead.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think I'm probably going to echo some of the things that I said, right? But one of the ways that, another way I think about the development community is I think about it as having these two ends, one with traditional Office and SharePoint developers, and the other side, traditional web developers, right? So traditional Office and SharePoint developers have never really had to worry that much about web technologies, right? Because if you wanted to create a content type in SharePoint, you could do it declaratively, you could do it programmatically. It wasn't like I needed a JavaScript framework to do it, right? And so I kind of jokingly say that, you know, a traditional, and that's the side I came from, as a traditional Office and SharePoint developer, you know, we're kind of like kids that were not allowed to go out alone, right? Our parents were always with us. They brought us to the park, that kind of stuff. We had helicopter parents. They told us exactly how to do things, and we asked permission for everything. And then when you look at traditional web developers who maybe haven't thought about SharePoint, you know, not only do I think there's a lot for them to learn, they can look, again, at using some of our services, but it's interesting to begin to interact with people who are in that world, right? Because people who are in the open source world, those developers, they're like free-range hipster kids that live down the street. You know, they don't ask permission to use a JavaScript library, they just use it. And and then what happens is they make a JavaScript library like in the garage. And you're like, well, who gave you permission to do that? Is that sanctioned by Microsoft? No, some guy made it in his garage and then everyone used it. And I say, but wait, my parents told me not to do stuff because other people were doing it. And that's exactly what the open source community is, right? If everyone else is doing it, you're supposed to do it too. So I look at these two ends, though, and what I see is what's all kind of coming towards the center. So traditional Office and SharePoint developers have a lot to learn in terms of using all those new things, right? Grunt and Gulp and NPM and Node and all those things that are now built into the latest version of Visual Studio. And web developers can learn from us, too, about how not to recreate things that already exist. If you need a document management system, why wouldn't you just use OneDrive? Why would you just, you know, why would you set about to create a brand new one and when you already have one there? So that's kind of the way I see it. And to me, that's also sort of the plan for where your skills, where you should be looking to improve your skills over time. Okay?
Awesome.
Good?
Thanks. Yeah. So that's from a developer's perspective. And again, if you're sort of thinking about as a developer or as a business decision maker, where do you want to target your investments of time and money? There's some very interesting statistics here about what the world is going to be looking like in the near future. And this reflects Microsoft's own thoughts about the importance of intelligence. By 2018, 30% of organizations will rely on graph-based applications, things like the Office graph, that enable self-organized teams to manage non-routine collaborative work. In other words, graphs will help do the work for you, bring the work to you when you need it, and get that work done. 30% of meetings will be facilitated by virtual concierges and advanced analytics. Bringing in, again, intelligence and bots. 20% of activities will be done using knowledge automatically extracted from previously observed activities. In other words, as intelligence starts to watch us work, it's going to start being able to figure out what the next step is in a process automatically and do it for us. And 15% of organizations will have a way of looking at their organization through the lens of analytics and intelligence and understanding how to make the organization work more effectively. So these are all things regarding intelligence. Documents that decide who needs to review them. Imagine you just wrote a document and it mentions a potential expense. And the intelligence is able to say, oh, this is obviously related to financial expenses. It should get routed to John in the expense department for approval. Content that drives security. I see a social security number in this document, and therefore we're going to apply specific policies automatically. That's actually at some level already a reality in Office 365 and SharePoint. Intelligence that predicts and schedules needed meetings. You might actually see this in some of Microsoft's experiences now, where if you start saying, "I need, you know, are you free Wednesday at 10 p.m.?" you start to get prompted whether you want to schedule a meeting. Signal graphing in AI that suggests the need for a document. Real-time contextual graphic, the ability to visualize information effectively, and automated processes. All of these things are important investment areas of the future. If you're a developer looking at the kinds of things you can build, this might be a very, very interesting guide for you. So to sort of start bringing this home, we mentioned that SharePoint and OneDrive's vision and mission is to reinvent content collaboration for the mobile-first, cloud-first, intelligent-powered world. We're going to be talking to you over the next couple of weeks about what we're doing to ensure that you have anywhere access and sharing for all of your files, so that you can get to your files anywhere on any device, share them with anyone, and be sure that those files are secure. And that we're going to be able to give you new ways of collaborating across your team and across your organization, regardless of what type of device or browser you're on. So we're going to be talking about those as we head up to May 4th here. I'm going to skip these last couple of slides just in the interest of time. So we'll skip those for a moment here. And I'd like to wrap up by suggesting that you follow us very closely on blogs.office.com/SharePoint over the coming weeks here. That's where we make all of our announcements, and certainly starting May 4th, you're going to see a lot of very, very interesting stuff. One of the things you'll see when we talk, when we reveal our vision on May 4th, is that it shows Microsoft has really, truly been listening to customers. One of the reasons I joined Microsoft this month is because I've been working with customers for 20 years, and I've seen the transformation in Microsoft's ability to listen to customers and actually take input and feedback and metrics and telemetry about what those customers are doing and turn them into actionable improvements on the products. It's very important that you know that we are listening to you. And please come to User Voice. There are channels for almost all of the core Microsoft products and services, including SharePoint and Office 365 and OneDrive. Tell us what it is you're looking for. Our engineering teams look at User Voice on a very, very regular basis. We pay attention to it. We respond within the context of User Voice to let you know when there's a suggestion you've made that we're actually starting to code. And please be involved with our journey in helping the products deliver more for you. And I think on May 4th, you'll see that we're doing a lot of that. You'll get, if you have been in the SharePoint space or Office 365 space in the past, I hope we blow your socks off. If you haven't been in the SharePoint and Office 365 space, I think on May 4th, you'll see that we mean business and that business will get a lot of value out of the new vision of SharePoint on-prem and in the cloud. So with that, I'd like to thank you guys for coming. If you've got additional questions, the three of us can stay up here to answer those questions after the keynote. Enjoy the remainder of SharePoint Intersection, Office 365 Intersection, and Dev Intersection, and have a great day. Thank you.